And you are either tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, or you're listening to an archive, perhaps. But this is the June 30th, 2019 edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Not sure how much of a flashback we're going to give you, because it's kind of tired tonight. I'm not sure how much of this I can put together before I crash in a heap. But let's see what we can do. In about half an hour, you'll be hearing Drew Glover giving a lengthy interview from a few days ago to a series of strong questions from me. I'm a critical supporter of Glover's, but also a critic, lest there be some mistake among his idolizers. But he is the best of a bad bunch at City Council. And we're going to have lots of other stuff, interviews at the River Street Campground, the usual rollicking round of chitter and chatter from the Food Not Bomb scene. Well, stay tuned and you'll hear it, and you'll hear what's cooking. Sort of.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you.
And before we look backward and check out the last week's various conversations and interviews, let's look forward to tomorrow, 4 o'clock, July 1st. It's going to be the Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. That's an advisory body. It doesn't really have a lot of real power, but it does have theoretical power, the power to review and bring issues to the shitty council, which isn't going to be meeting until August. Second Tuesday in August, actually. Let's see, on the Parks and Rec Commission, we have Christina Glavis, my apologies for any mispronunciations, Jillian Greensight, Altira Hatton, Dawn Schott Norris, Jane Mio, Vice Chair Holly Locatelli, and the Chair Jim Brown. And Tony Elliott is on the staff. Gosh, I thought for some reason that Barbara Riverwoman was involved there, but I guess not. Coming up on the agenda is the Downtown Streets team, which has gotten a lot of critical analysis from Brent Adams in conversations past. He was concerned that a lot of money was being spent on the Downtown Streets team that could have been more broadly used to provide real support services for homeless people rather than a smattering of underpaid jobs for a few, cleaning up trash. Legitimate concern. I talked to him again yesterday or the day before. He doesn't want to go on the air again. He seems to feel that my show isn't really a good platform for him, and that very few people listen to me. I can't dispute him either way. That way, he might be right, he might be wrong, I don't know. But he did talk candidly about a lot of issues, some of which I'll be discussing, perhaps, if not in this show, then in future times, because Brent is, he's done a lot of study of the workings of the different social service poverty pimps, as I call them, of the area. and some of the, let's be more generous and even accurate, social service providers, those who actually provide social services. Brent is kind of a social service provider. He provides free storage space for homeless people. He doesn't get much in the way of county and city support to do so. I guess he does get a little. But in any case, the Downtown Streets team is the first item on the agenda. But there are no files available in the terms of supporting documents. We then pass to approval of the minutes, a tree permit appeal, and then the issue that concerns some of us at the Conscience in Action group and HUF. Those are groups concerned with civil liberties for all newcomers and the criminalization of homeless people that is being advanced as a broader kind of ground-level narrative that everyone's supposed to sort of accept. Oh, yeah, well, we know they're drug addicts, and we all know they're kind of crazies in need of mental health, and that they're all pretty much in that bag. And, you know, they don't really need housing so much as training in how to, you know, walk into a house and balance a checkbook and things of that sort, because they're just kind of all fucked up. And that's why they're homeless. It's their fault. And, you know, they're a bunch of junkies and that sort of thing. Or else they're service resistant and they just won't go into it because they prefer that lifestyle, or they're just unable to follow rules. The whole series of negative stereotypes about homeless people, which resulted in the closing of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms and the creating of a fence around the Laurel Park area and the increased patrolling of the area with first alarm security thugs. Guards, if you want to be nice. Thugs, if you want to be, I think, more accurate as to what their function is toward poor and homeless people. This happened when the San Lorenzo campground closed in the spring of 2018, and homeless people sort of migrated to different parks, one of which was Laurel Park, and that involved losing using the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, which alarmed the horses and the natives of the area because, you know, well, more extensive use of bathrooms can result in some problems or some tie-up or even just a visual bad look, as well as some needle use, you know, in that area. Some homeless people are needle users, for sure. And therefore, they decided to lock the bathrooms so nobody could use them. And not to appear to be discriminating against the homeless, they decided nobody could use bathrooms except people who were registered in or acknowledged to be a part of regular programs at the Loudoun Nelson Center, or just programs that were happening. This, of course, violated the entire tradition of these being community bathrooms for a lot that's been going on for ever since I've been to town, since in the 70s, that I remember. And it was a clear punch in the jaw to homeless people generally. And I think kind of adds another layer of resentment that the community has, because the community sees public resources being closed and the blame being laid on homeless people. And in fact, what's happening is the authorities are kowtowing to a kind of nasty subgroup that holds homeless people to be the cause of much, if not all, evil in the community, and that the real problem is we don't have beefed up enough police forces, parks and rec rangers, etc. Anyway, this fourth item on the Parks and Rec Commission is hours of public facilities, and it has the appearance of being something substantial without the reality, but what the appearance is that the Parks and Recreation Commission consider a request to modify the municipal code to establish a new provision that park closures lasting more than 14 days must have city council authorization. And also Parks and Rec consider the request to support the current administration policy to provide restroom facilities at Loudoun Nelson Center to patrons using the facility for classes, programs, or other scheduled uses. That is a complete inversion of what was presented by Councilmember Glover back in January, when our concern, and that of every single candidate except Rochelle Naroyan, who attended, I guess there were a couple who did not attend, but it was eight or nine of the council candidates who ran, many of them conservatives, who agreed that the Loudoun Nelson bathroom should be opened immediately. This, however, is a resolution requesting that the current administration policy closing them be continued. And also, it is a sort of a very endlessly wordy charter about a very kind of unnecessarily reiterated and extended verbal document. Not a verbal document, it's a written document, but it just seems wordy in the extreme, that for some reason took 6 months to get out, when there was originally a demand by some of the activists and some members of the community that these bathrooms be immediately reopened, because the only justification for closing them were claims of vandalism that really did not meet the straight-faced test of actually being substantial in terms of any unusual level of injury to the bathrooms. Now, this is disputed by the bathroom guardian, Skidmark Bob Duran, who is a former free radio broadcaster, but who didn't want to go public with his discussion, didn't want to be interviewed, couldn't be reached by phone. So I'm a little bit skeptical of his account. I'm not saying he's a dirty liar and a coward, but I am saying I'd like to get some clearer information before I swallow his kind of offhand stories to me whole, without any further embellishments or proofs or analysis. So anyway, the Conscience Action decided where we're going to go to this meeting. I was a little skeptical of the value of the Parks and Rec Commission meeting, but one of the ideas was, Steve Plaich was a big advocate of this, to give them another chance and to show up in numbers and so forth, and really press the idea that people need to have a place to use the bathrooms, or they'll use the bushes. I mean, it's kind of obvious, but of course that gives the right wing reactionaries more. Look at those homeless; they're beasts, as far as that narrative goes. So we need more place to control them. At least, maybe in my paranoid state, that's how it appears to me. Anyway, that's happening at 4 o'clock on Monday. Tomorrow, if you're listening to this account on Sunday, June 30th. And it's happening at the City Council Chamber, so you might want to check that out. There's not much really to be found in the staff report. They don't examine the real record, which is how much vandalism was there the year before that supposedly justified this sudden shift in policy, this exclusionary anti-homeless policy. We had to kind of pull these things from the teeth of the Parks and Rec Department's files week by week and month by month and document by document. And what I found, and what those of us looking over the documents found, was there is very little of a substantive and sustained kind of damage that would justify this really radical change in policy. That there's really something else happening here. A new nasty narrative is being created instead and being imposed from on high by the people who are running the Loudoun Nelson Center and backed up by the bosses above them, in this case now being Tony Elliott, the head of Parks and Rec. Then this whole thing is going to be followed on July 8th with a protest in front of Parks and Rec's offices, which is right next to the Civic Auditorium on Church Street. That's going to happen at 3 o'clock on July 8th. So 4 o'clock on July 1st, 3 o'clock on July 8th. If you want to see bathrooms restored and you want to have your voice heard there, come on down. We'll be talking more about that on Thursday and next Sunday on the next two editions of this show, likely. So I'm down here at Food Not Bombs, and hey, Jim. And it's 5 o'clock. That's the 5 o'clock bell. It's June 22nd. I'm talking with
Roy Tangroy.
And if I could, I'm not sure how much of this I'm going to be able to hear, but you say you've gone to a safer place to sleep. It's kind of out of the way.
That's what I'm trying to do.
And last night, were you able to do that? You're saying no.
Tonight for the first time.
For the first time. Now, what have you done for the last week, if you wish to say?
One place to go at night, and through the day, another place.
And is it downtown, on the edge of town, outside, in the boonies?
Well, the for the elders on Post Street. Yeah, I spend my days during the week, the 5 days during the week, I spend my days there. You can be there for approximately 4 hours a day.
And where is this?
On Post Street.
On Post Street?
Post and Pioneer, the Elder Day.
Oh, yeah, I think I've heard of Elder Day.
Yeah.
How is it?
It's got what you need, basically.
And what does that involve? I mean, what kind of facilities do they have?
Well, most of us really appreciate the food.
What kind of food?
Oh, they're conscientious about a diet. And so rather than load you up with a whole bunch of food, those of us that lost our teeth, we can have something ground up for us. And
you don't look fat, I'll tell you. You don't look fat.
No. And anyways, I fit in well there. They're helping me get glasses.
So you have some glasses?
Well, I got the glasses now, but it was a cell phone.
Yeah.
I couldn't get anywhere with the cell phone thing. And so they found some new source. And I don't know how many weeks it's going to take. They don't know either, but...
I wish you luck on that. 4 hours a day at Elder Day.
Yeah.
And what's another stop you use, if any? Where else do you go?
Well, I got...
4 hours only, you know, just 24 hours.
I got it up on storage. I have to travel very, very carefully.
You're pointing... This is your storage item?
No, just part of stuff for what I need. Like, I got a lot of collectibles. And I have to unload that.
And nothing has been stolen from you recently?
Oh, this goes on for the 20 years I've been in this area.
But anything in the last month or two?
No. Well, sometimes when you put your stuff down where you're going to sleep, people go through and maybe D-pens, whatever they may need, you know. And
Generous provider of the people?
I used to willingly help these people out until I realized you got to draw the line. You got to plan ahead of time what you're not going to do and what you're going to do or what you might do. But when I was attacked on the street...
How long ago?
6 months ago. I've still got some holes in my leg, but much improved.
Good.
6 months to get this done. The hospital was a near-death experience. Watsonville Hospital as well as the Dominican.
Charming.
Bad experience. What was on me? My billfold? My clothes? They claimed nothing about it. They said, no, you had it yourself. I said, no, you attacked me with four security guys, little guys, at Dominican. And they pumped me full of antibiotics. And every day that I was there for I don't know how many weeks, kept pumping me with antibiotics, lying, saying it was other stuff. And that's why we couldn't heal this fast. It was taking much too long.
So you've gotten out of that scene.
Yeah.
That's good. We've been talking with...
Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
With... Jim. That's Jim. Jim, I know you. When you came to the Conscience in Action meeting, you were telling me that there's another attempt, well, I should say attempt to displace you.
That's right. They're trying to take away my Section 8 voucher.
What's their latest pretext? I think you showed it to me before, but summarize it.
I have a new letter which has items 1 to 5, and they want me to fulfill the items. And I don't know how to... it's a timing. They're too fast.
So, when we spoke on Wednesday a few days ago, you know, you said you might be talking to Cynthia Berger, who I know, I think she's doing less of that kind of work now. Have you had any chance to talk to her?
Oh, no. I have to call her up, though. I got to wait for the timing.
And you've been successful in maintaining your residence so far.
Yes, I've gotten through the court one time, and I'm able to stay. So I'm working on it.
What's your next move here?
More housing authority, and I have a counselor that will help me. Just more housing authority headaches. And I have to go back and present myself a nice interface, you know, nice, pleasant conversation. and wait to see what they say.
And this is, and where is this? Where does this all happen?
On 41st Avenue at the Housing Authority office in Capitola.
I think.
Yes, yeah. So I'm doing okay.
And we've been talking with
Jim.
Thank.
Yeah, I'm Jim. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jim. Talking to a traveler whose name is.
Oh, I'm Tim.
And Tim, anything new that you haven't said before you'd like to pass on that's new and exciting, or old and boring but interesting?
Oh,
it's contradiction.
I have recently been thinking about how capoeira, or the elements, rather, of capoeira and permaculture.
Capoeira being?
An Afro-Brazilian dance art form that helped to free slaves from bondage back in the day. And is now is practiced as mostly a extremely passive, non-contact dance art martial art.
And so again, the value of this as far as you're concerned is?
People circling and making music together in a non-hierarchically arranged pattern. There's no stage, as it were.
And have you seen this happen in Santa Cruz much?
I haven't seen it in Santa Cruz, but to my knowledge, there is some going on somewhere.
Well, there is a Cafe Brazil. I don't know if it's a South American custom a lot or African. I don't know. What do countries have a lot of this?
You know, I just researched yesterday at the library because I realized how much I didn't know about something that I thought was so important, that it's from Angola, which is in Africa, but it was more popularized and developed in Brazil.
Uh-huh. Here you go. I think that's where I may have heard the term. So are you outside in Santa Cruz these days?
Yep. Well, no, I'm not living outside, but I spend a lot of time outside.
But yeah. You got an indoor spot.
I've been staying at one of the shelters, so to speak, at the VFW.
How is it?
I've enjoyed it. There are some things that could improve, but overall, the people that work for the Salvation Army are incredibly awesome people.
That's out on 7th Avenue?
Yeah.
And you take the bus out there, the shuttle?
The shuttle, yeah.
And how many folks are out there usually on a typical night?
Well, it fluctuates. Lately, as the weather has gotten warmer, it's been less. I haven't really been keeping track, but lately it's been about 30-something.
A lot of spaces.
In the 30s. There is a lot of space since the weather got warm, but I also realized that not everyone wants to restrict their lifestyle by being in at bed, so to speak, at 5 or 6 in the day. It definitely limits your social abilities.
And you have to get up at 5 or 6 in the morning.
Right, which is something that was actually helpful for me because I'm not traditionally a morning person, but I'm trying to become more of a morning person because I want to work on more farms. So it's been good for me, but I could see how it'd be painfully unpleasant for some people.
At least, unfamiliar.
Unfamiliar, yeah. It's not like you don't get enough period of sleep, but it's perhaps not the schedule people are used to. You definitely have adequate time to sleep. It's 12 hours. I mean, if you want it to be, you can be there from about 5 to about 5. So that's a more than generous amount of time to...
How's the food?
You know, I have so many food intolerances that I
you
can't...
You don't eat there.
I don't personally eat because there's so many foods that I have. I can't even eat at any restaurants, really, to be honest. I have a whole list of food intolerances. But they've been generous enough to let me keep... because I have food intolerances, they've been generous enough to make exceptions for me. And I think that they do that for people that who have different diets. And they do try to accommodate people of different diets. If you let them know...
This is a first-come, first-serve thing. In other words, you haven't got a spot reserved for you, right?
No.
And you aren't required to come back every night or else risk being thrown out.
Oh, no. You can come back whenever you want, and there's no spots reserved. First-come, first-serve. Yep.
Fair enough. You mentioned there's some things that might need improvement. What would those be?
Well, I think identifying people who need specific help and maybe need more services than the VFW is able to provide in that area should be redirected to places that need more help. So maybe like a little bit of special treatment to certain people who are observed to be struggling for the benefit of them and for the benefit of the group.
So give me an example of that.
As it would relate to either sickness or cleanliness.
I mean, are there actually places to refer people to? I mean, what I often say on this show is, for example, they talk about transitional campgrounds. We don't have any here, but those are the supposed objective of the city council, navigation centers with transitional campgrounds that will send people into housing, but there's no housing. So similarly, something that directs people to services, but often there's not really much in the way of services. For example, addiction services, they're full up, or they're over, you know, understaffed, or there's just not room. And I'm glad to hear that it sounds like shelter services are not, at least this particular shelter you're at, they have extra space for those who want to use them. Is that right?
They do have extra space. And I think you're absolutely right. They're doing what they can, but there is only so much that is available outside of what their day-to-day services are. So they did a great job identifying someone who needed to go to the hospital, but short of the extreme of needing to go to the hospital, they do great jobs at it, identifying when someone is at the threshold that they can intervene and say, we need you to go, or we believe that it is imperative that you go to a hospital. And they do it in a very kind and professional way. But short of that, I feel like it would be...
There's no medical services.
Oh, no, they don't. To my knowledge, they don't provide any medical services. There's a first aid kit there, but no, I don't
think. No dental services, no haircuts, none of that stuff.
No, they do give out clothes, which is helpful. I think that at some point, if you're really needing a haircut, they might know people to do it, but I don't think it's under the umbrella of the Salvation Army. I think that they're just connected to generous people who give out haircuts for free.
So on the... on the streets, because you've been on the streets a bit, I take it.
Yeah.
What have you seen as far as police and ranger behavior toward folks who are carrying their stuff around with them?
Well, see, that's why I'm at the VFW, is because I'm used to either pressure from the cops or the people, but not both. And that's why Santa Cruz is a little bit uncomfortable for me, because I worry about the cops. I am paranoid of the cops. In my life, I've had good reason to be paranoid of the cops, and... and the people, there's people in houses that are unhappy that I'm sleeping on the ground, and then there's people that are sleeping on the ground with me that may not like me because I am not always overly friendly, and I don't really group up or click up with people. So because I feel like I have to worry from so many different...
directions?
Yeah, directions. That's why I've been staying at the VFW. Because it's
you fled the streets.
I did flee the streets
at night.
at nighttime, yeah.
When was the last time you ventured out into a nighttime street sleep?
Oh well, a couple times since I've been here. Sometimes I miss the bus, and I'm not like really afraid of sleeping. It's like
you're more comfortable there.
I'm more comfortable at the VFW. Yeah, it's not that like if I miss the bus, and it's not the end of the world. I'm not gonna. I think 2 nights ago I slept outside because I had so much fun at the beach. I didn't make it back for the bus, and I didn't stress about it. But I'm not. I kind of have to look for a special place where I feel more or less safe, more or less.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're expressing yourself pretty clearly. We've been talking with
Tim.
Anything you want to add, Tim?
No, I just hope that everyone can have compassion, realize classism is a two-way street. No one should be a slave to retail, and no one should not have a bathroom to use.
Okay, good. Thank you, Tim. Gavinu has a new restaurant, or maybe it's not that new. It's the Pokey House next to Lulu Carpenter's, which has seized additional sidewalk space across from the sidewalk space of Verve, and then up the street, the Zoccoli's. The old-time Japanese restaurant that used to be across the way here is still the building is still vacant where it was. And occasionally you see a man with a guitar strumming on a bench, but he's even has a backpack with him. Whoa.
Let's rush him and smoke him out.
When I was just a little kid, my friends and I'd play war. We'd shoot them dead and blow them up. Didn't know what we were fighting for. Whenever my dad would see us playing, he'd come and spoil our fun. He'd say, "War is not a game, son. Not a game." When I turned 18, I joined the army. Our country was at war. The recruiter said I was a patriot. It was peace I'd be fighting for. I couldn't wait to tell my dad. Thought he'd be proud of what I'd done. But he said, "War is always the same, son. Then he put his arms around me and told me things I never heard before. He told me what he'd seen and done when he was in the war. He said, "Son, I'll always respect you for doing what you thought was right. But the only way that there'll be peace is if we all refuse to fight." Now the army sent me off to war. I was still 18 years old. They taught me how to hate and how to kill and just do what I was told. I could hear my father saying every time I fired my gun, "War is not a game, son. War is always the same."
And that was "War is Not a Game" by Bill Durston, which is followed on the YouTube presentation, which has some video along with that music. If war, a quote from M.K. Gandhi, "If war had no redeeming feature, no courage and heroism behind it, it would be a despicable thing and would not need speeches to destroy it." And an important story appeared in last Sunday's Santa Cruz Sentinel. Headline story: judge reassigned after censure. Attorneys confirm judicial misconduct by Michael Todd. Santa Cruz: challenges are rising for an embattled Santa Cruz judge reassigned to dependency court after she disrupted a homicide trial with an emotional confession of misconduct as a slew of attorneys revealed their years-long boycott of her courtroom. Among her critics are seven active and former attorneys who pledged never to bring another case before Superior Judge Ariadne Simons after they or their clients claimed to have experienced unfair treatment. All of them said the judge should be removed from office. Simons is the state's first arbiter this year to receive severe public censure by the Commission on Judicial Performance. The worst punishment a sitting judge can receive before removal continuing the story from elected office, in Simon's case, was negotiated in the form of a plea deal made public. "Is she fit to be a sitting judge? Absolutely not," said Ed Newman, a Stanford law grad practicing real estate law in Capitola. "The judge has a lot of power in a jury trial. The jurors think they walk on water." He filed a previous complaint with the commission, which privately admonished Simons for creating the appearance of embroilment in connection with an order to show cause against an attorney. What that means, I do not know. Hard to decipher, but onward. In 2015, Simons was reprimanded for publicly discussing a factual scenario at sentencing for a case in her courtroom and for making comments creating the appearance of bias against transients. And this begins to sound like it's a matter that I might be more concerned about. Again, it's a rather vaguely couched, and I guess I'm not surprised. Michael Todd, who I spoke with at Ross Camp, seemed to have a pretty severe, seemed rather defensive when I talked to him about his failure to mention the reality of the Ross Camp dispersal being providing a worse alternative for most of the people in it with no adequate shelter, something he never mentioned in his stories about Ross Camp. He seemed relatively defensive about that whole issue. And here he's not talking about the real particulars that might give some a real punch and force to these concerns about Simons by the public defenders and attorneys, well, criminal defense attorneys. It was among eight acts of misconduct for which the commission publicly denounced Simons in May. And again, the Commission on Public Judicial Performance, do I have that right? Commission on Judicial Performance is not something that really pays very, very close attention to judges in terms of, or at least it hasn't given us a lot of negative comments about judges. It's always appeared to me to be a pretty weak group. So when they do give even a censure rather than maybe some significant, I don't know, I'm not sure if they have the power to remove her, but I think that the story seems to indicate they have more power than they're using here. It still means something. So here's a bit more from this story. Criminal defense attorney Lisa McCammy said there is an exodus of attorneys trying to avoid Simons Court for fear of impartiality. She said Simons, maybe they mean partiality, Simons should be removed from office. And I do not say that lightly, McCammy said. I do know that several members of the defense community have also been disqualifying her from their cases for years due to issues they have had with her as a prosecutor and a judge, and more attorneys have started disqualifying her since the censure. McCammy has been disqualifying Judge Simons from my cases for years for concerns about judicial bias. The most recent severe public censure was not a surprise to me, McCammy said. It was yet another shocking and disappointing list of incidents regarding Ms. Simons' questionable behavior that I and other members of the criminal justice community have witnessed and known about for years. Again, we're not getting specific, and I wish she would. And I wish Todd would ask her questions pressing that point. Defense attorney Doug Fox has been critical of Simons since she sought the district attorney's seat but was not appointed. The commission also admonished Simons for running a red light and helping her husband with a court filing with intentions to have the citation dismissed, according to a release from the commission. I think she should be recalled because I think rather than allowing her to stand for re-election, we should take a stand as a community to demand unquestioned ethics from our judges, not people who fix their own traffic tickets, Fox said. I just think the Commission on Judicial Performance has just caught up with her. Gerald Bowden, a retired attorney, said he appeared before Simons years ago and was shocked by her threats to hold him in contempt of court. In 50 years of law practice, I've never seen a judge act in such a prejudicial manner, Bowden said. She needs to be removed. His was among three known threats of contempt Simons has directed towards attorneys in her court. Contempt of court refers to acts deemed disrespectful to the bench. The reasons varied. One attorney cited the wrong case in a court document before correcting the mistake. Another asked a plaintiff a question in a civil trial. And a third litigant offered assistance to counsel but was told and ordered by a bailiff to move to the gallery with the audience. Concerns over Simons' censure are unfolding in Santa Cruz County Superior Court. Two public defenders last month tried to disqualify her from a homicide trial in which she became very teary-eyed, emotional, and visibly upset, disclosing part of her punishment by the commission, the state oversight for judges. An out-of-county judge must determine whether Simons is fit to preside over the pending case against two defendants accused of killing a 24-year-old man on on the San Lorenzo West levee in August 2016. Simons declined to recuse herself and deemed the public defender's motion to disqualify unverified. She denied allegations of bias against a defendant, the public defender's office, or its attorneys working the trial now in its second month. Attorneys Sherry Shom and Jerry Vinloan claim Simons did not disclose most of her admonished cases, one involving their employer's firm in court. The attorneys also contest Simons' timing for the disclosure. She signed the reprimand April 19th, but mentioned on May 10th only one case for which she was punished after telling a Latino defendant not to drink 40s in front of his children. Simons said she cannot comment on a pending case, but she said she retains a good relationship with the Santa Cruz Public Defender's Office. And there's more quotes from her on that and discussions of her situation and being moved back to Watsonville Juvenile Dependency and Small Claims Court by Presiding Judge Paul Burdick. And it's mentioning of who's replacing her. And then there's actually a second story. This is a rather long and interesting story, but I'm going to interrupt it and perhaps conclude it and encourage people to look at it if they'd like. It's in the on the Sunday Sentinel from last Sunday, June 23rd. So check it out if you'd like. I haven't had much to do with Simons except when I've spoken with her out of court at one of the Project Connects where she came and made representations about supporting homeless people in what I always regarded as a suspicious deal that she, the DAs, other judges, more usual suspects like Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl of the City Council, and people from Bob Lee's prosecutors when Bob was still around as district attorney, got together to essentially find ways to clean so-called habitual offenders out of the downtown, where we're talking about habitual defenses around issues like sleeping, sitting on the sidewalk, open container, things of that sort. Although, admittedly, some of this might have to do with repeated public drunkenness and alcoholism, but the point here had to do with things like whether, and this was the issue that Susie O'Hara was simply telling false stories about, that is to say that people would get housing for, that would be the whole point of the intervention against folks downtown, rather than simply to remove them from the area and give them bus tickets out of here or get them to leave or stay away orders or increased punishments or time in jail. We'd actually provide some kind of pathway to housing. That, as far as I know, has never been documented as being the case. So Simons seemed to be a part of that whole sort of procedure, and she was at the Project Homeless Connect representing it when I talked to her, which was a couple of years back. So I haven't had any really much experience with her, but frankly, I'm glad to see it when judges are, if not held accountable, at least some of the dirt is coming out of the closet for the public to be aware of. Because these people hold very high and powerful positions in our community and are generally unaccountable, even though they supposedly run for election and so forth. But it's usually reelected without really any meaningful opposition or contest. But I'm a bit behind now, 13 minutes behind, in fact. I promised folks who are at the Chris Krohn, Drew Glover, resist the recall or oppose the recall or no on the recall group that assembled yesterday, at the El Rio community room, including a lot of old-time politicos, Ed Porter, former council member, Celia Scott, former mayor, Chris Krohn, of course, victim of the recall and a former mayor himself. And 20 or 30, maybe 40 supporters who are looking for a way to fight the recall after a very large pro-recall meeting, which I didn't get to, in fact, which wasn't really strongly announced. It was strategically held, I think, around, I guess it was either Thursday or Friday in the police community room, when a lot of the opponents of the recall were at home watching the Democratic Party debates or some sort of Bernie Sanders event. Maybe that was on Wednesday, I'm not sure. Anyway, I talked to Drew about other issues. Drew Glover is a guy I've devoted some time and analysis to over the last 6 months. I originally felt that there was more wind than substance in a lot of what he had to say. Project Pollinate had little to do with, for example, racial profiling whenever folks from Huff would come to him and ask for assistance in that regard. We wouldn't get it when he was doing this sort of what I regarded as a lot of puffery with Project Pollinate. But maybe it's simply, you know, it's different focus. And when he did get into power, he began very seriously to address some real issues about the need for encampments, the need to reopen bathrooms, the need to examine criminalization of the homeless. And he was stymied by Watkins and City Manager Bernal and the council minority, and then the shifting temperament of Justin Cummings. What I'm going to do is I'm either going to play this half-hour interview through directly and then perhaps make some comments, or maybe I'll stop it halfway through, but I don't want to... I was criticized for, in the last broadcast, interrupting too frequently in the Public Safety Committee meeting, which is another group that Drew Glover heads that. It's a city council subcommittee supposedly charged with overseeing fire and police, but not really doing that good a job yet, or perhaps ever, I don't know. Anyway, listen in, and I will hopefully cut in at some point and make some comments, though it is my dialogue with him, so you can hear me raising issues as we speak and as he gives his perspective. This was last Thursday. During the day, I'd hoped to broadcast it last Thursday evening, but here it is now.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, Drew. So you're on the air soon, later today, on the stream of free radio. We're talking with Councilmember Drew Glover, who's a busy man and putting in a few minutes to talk. You had a council meeting on Tuesday, Drew, that covered a number of issues that were important, in which we discussed, and which you actually had a public meeting about, which you're now holding before every council meeting. Friday at, what is it, 5 o'clock, the Friday before regular council meetings?
5:30.
Thank you, 5:30. And that's at the city council, city manager's conference room or some such thing, is that what they call it?
Yeah, City Hall at 809 Center Street in Santa Cruz in room 10 in the conference room. We'll have signs on the window since the City Hall closes at 5 p.m. in the evening. We have a situation where we let people into the conference room through a side door.
And you do a lot of dialogue was allowed, and I mean, you know, you tried to relatively keep it tight and close to a series of running through the agenda that you were, you know, describing for folks. But you also allowed a lot of questions, and I thought it was, I think a lot of us found it very helpful. But some of the issues that came up, I wanted to follow up on with you, if I can.
All right.
One of the main issues that I found was important was a procedural issue, which I raised, and I guess Chris Krohn was also concerned about because he was also there, which has to do with the difficulty in getting the mayor to put items on future agendas and how that can essentially be, shall we say, added to, worked around, or challenged, if you will, by having those items voted at a prior city council meeting to go on the agenda in what's called, the agenda setting session? What do we call that part of the agenda where that council can vote on that?
Yeah, I don't have the exact language in front of me. I prefer to usually like calendar review.
That sounds good. Let's call it calendar review. That usually happens at the end of the council meeting, but suddenly Mayor Watkins put that at the beginning of the council meeting at this last Tuesday session. What did you make of that? And I was concerned that there was no reaction from either you or other council members about that. What's your reaction to that?
Well, ever since the beginning of my term in office, there has been an issue with the ability for us to get items that we feel are urgent on the agenda, whether it be due to a backlog of other issues that have been set up from previous councils that need our action, or a variety of other reasons as to why they haven't showed up on the agenda. And multiple times the mayor has said during that agenda review or calendar review portion of the agenda, when we have as a majority decided that something was urgent enough to expedite onto the next agenda, she's expressed a discomfort with that process because of her wanting to prioritize other things in the meetings and not being able to if we insisted something's on the agenda. So I think that this was a change. I'm not sure. I don't want to say that there was any intention behind it because I haven't had that discussion with the mayor yet as to any other intentions other than to put it at the beginning of the meeting. It does, however, create an issue with the ability for council members to agendize topics that come up during the meeting that turn out to be so urgent that we feel that they should be placed on the next agenda. Since I think why you didn't hear a lot of pushback for this agenda specifically was because we do anticipate for there to be massive agendas coming back in August with the first and second meetings of August, very full with things, with report backs, as well as moving forward with conversations around some things that are already in motion. So the reason I didn't put a big protest up this time was because, first of all, I believe that there will be a lot of stuff coming up on these next agendas, and it'll be a conversation at the next council meeting, ideally, and it'll give me a chance to discuss it with the mayor one-on-one before that next meeting.
Well, first of all, of course, you know, I probably disagree with you on this, but I appreciate your showing a concern about the significance of the issue. I got the impression that you were going to, if not challenge this, because Christopher Crone suggested he was concerned about this whole thing being moved to the beginning of the agenda, but also that this was an opportunity to do things like raise another issue, which it's a longstanding concern of mine, and one of yours too, which you brought up back in January, which has to do with determining which kinds of police activity around infraction arrests or citations has the most impact on people outside, and how this is perhaps, if not used to target people, has an impact particularly on homeless people and disproportionately impacts them. I mean, you've tried repeatedly to get this on agendas, I guess through mentioning at city council, but never actually mandating that it go on a city council meeting after it was supposed to appear in May at the first council meeting. And I've been critical of you for not insisting this go on the next agenda because I have no confidence the mayor is going to do this. And because
well,
I think...
Let me pause you right there.
Sure.
I did actually do that.
Did you?
Back in May, I believe, or late April, I made a motion during the calendar review portion of the afternoon agenda to prioritize the ordinance data to come back at the next council meeting. That was the infamous council meeting where the mayor ejected everyone from the council chambers and then made everyone watch from the outside.
I remember that meeting.
Yeah. So at that meeting, it was scheduled to go on to the next meeting, but in the evening agenda, after Council Member Crone and I left in protest of the treatment of citizens, essentially Vice Mayor Cummings made the motion to reconsider that previous vote, and then that's when he made the motion to postpone it, not to have it on the next agenda, and only for us to receive memos from the staff about their analysis, so not even putting on the agenda. My criticism with that action was that, as we're seeing now, we're not going to even be able to hear or review the data in the public eye until at least the second meeting of August, because we didn't even get a chance to really discuss it thoroughly this last Tuesday.
Now, did the memos ever appear as provided for by Cummings' resolution in late April?
No.
So, in other words, his direction and the council's direction was ignored by the staff? Is that a clear understanding of what happened?
So, I can't put any value judgment on why it didn't happen, because I can't project my own assumptions onto the staff and their motivations.
But it didn't happen.
However, the motion was to have a memo of an analysis come to city council members before June 11th, and that never happened. And I still have not received the memo of the analysis. I can't go much more into detail about where the data is at the moment because it was discussed in a closed session.
However, it was also the subject of an open resolution that you made way back in January, and then a discussion at the April City Council meeting. So insofar as that is the issue, you can say where that data is, correct?
The data is ready to be reviewed by the council, but we have not had a chance to do that in closed session.
And do I understand the pretext, and that's exactly what it is as far as I can see, for doing this, is that there's some sort of litigation concern here?
So I unfortunately cannot confirm nor deny that because that was conversation in closed session. I do know, though, that the statistic, the analysis is confidential at the moment, but the statistics, I believe, are available for public record request.
Can you...
I believe that the ACLU has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request.
Well, you have the statistics. If they're open, will you please provide them to us?
I don't have them. I have not received them. That's the thing. I haven't even received a packet of information of the statistics. But I can work on obtaining the raw statistical data.
Well, yeah, I would request that you send an email to Condotti or the police department requesting that information immediately, saying that, you know, you don't have to take responsibility for it yourself, though I'm sure you probably don't have any problem with that, saying at least one of your constituents is essentially, you know, saying where the hell is it, you know, because it was...
Well, no, I mean, I put forward the motion on February 12th to have it agendized at the next meeting. Then I believe that the second meeting in February is when the motion was actually, you know, put forth to get the data. So I am just as interested in seeing the data as any other constituent that has been paying attention to the issue. So I would be happy to do that and was already planning on doing it anyway.
Good. I mean, I would wonder, for example, if forgive me for being critical here, why on June 11th you did not attempt to get this agendized for the June 25th agenda, because it obviously, the data had not reached you on the 11th.
It was because I was told that it would be on the 25th agenda.
Yeah, but you know that what you're being told, forgive me for, you know, pressing this point, is subject to frequent change, depending on the mood of the mayor, the city manager, the city attorney, and Justin Cummings.
Right, but I have to operate in some form of good faith, at least in these first months of trying to kind of orient the culture of the local government. I'd love to take them at their word when they say that something's going to happen. The more that doesn't happen, though, creates an example of my own personal experience of not being able to securely believe that things that are scheduled to come forth are going to come forth. But in all, with reason, we have to take into consideration the workload that the staff has. I know that's not your favorite excuse in the world, but... at the strategic planning session, which it was unfortunate that you weren't there, would have been good to have
I heard a report about it.
There was ample opportunities for public comment during that period of the strategic planning session. But during the second half of the strategic planning session, when they put up all of the different things that are carried over from the previous council that they're still working on, I can understand where they feel overloaded, essentially, because we are coming in and transitioning the direction that Santa Cruz has been going, or at least attempting to retransition the direction. Now, to implement new direction while implementing old direction seems like it is rather complicated. time on it at the strategic planning session, unfortunately. But as a council, we need to start prioritizing what it is that we want the staff hours to go towards. And that may mean either diverting or abandoning resources going towards previously focused on items from previous councils, or figuring out another solution. But it is very true that there is a lot in motion in city government right now just because of the differing ideologies of these two past councils.
I mean, this is really a key point, and I think one that the only person who's really brought this up is you, to your credit. And you bring it up continuously, at the same time trying to walk this delicate line of not offending the mayor and, you know, not wanting to have everybody work together, kumbaya, along with, you know, the principles you have of nonviolence and cooperation. But the fact is there's a serious split on this council that has to do with the split in interests and orientation, and it is real. And it's not likely, in my mind, to be schmoozed over. It has to be essentially confronted. I mean, they're confronting it with a recall against two of you. You know, I mean, it's clearly there. So, for example, when Condotti comes in the beginning of May and says, gee, I'm really sorry, I don't have this stuff, but I'll have it at the next meeting, you can't really say, oh, the staff wasn't able to do it. The staff did it. It's just not presenting it. Isn't that true?
I don't know when they finished all of the stuff. You know, I have not been in direct, consistent communication with the attorney over the timelines and when the data has been available or been presented. So, unfortunately, this is politics. Is it slow and incremental, at least at this point, because of the division and because of the resistance from a portion of the council and a portion of the community? So I like to look at it less at what we don't have and more at what we do have. We do have access now to raw statistical data that looks at citation distribution in the community. So that data has been compiled, and now we can request it or retrieve it and then look at it. So that's really good. The analysis from the attorney, while we don't have access to it publicly, is being analyzed and is going to be talked about at the next meeting, or even in a special meeting potentially between now and then, if we feel so drawn to. I don't know if that'll happen, but that's up for the community to push their elected officials and say, hey, we really want this prioritized. Will it happen? I have no idea. We're making, like I said, slow but real impacts, whether it be the establishment of the data collection, which is the most tepid thing in the world, but it's still an incredibly controversial issue for people that are opponents to the progressive ideology that we're trying to establish in Santa Cruz. The ability for us to move towards, even if it's just symbolically, you know, making statements about police violence, making statements about sustainability.
Well, I'm always glad the statements you're making as city council is always refreshing to hear. But the fact of the matter, well, often refreshing to hear. But the fact of the matter is that we're no closer. The public is no closer to getting any data than it was on May, in the first meeting in May, when it was promised. And your promises sound like Condotti's promises, in the sense that you don't have the data. It's not in your hands. It's not in my hands. It's not available for the community. So, you know, it begins to sound a little like I'm listening to Mayor Watkins is the problem when I hear this, you know, gosh, we're really advancing forward. The glass is half full. No, it's not until we get the actual stuff, given the kind of maneuvers that have been used. Anyway, that's my opinion. I'm interested more in your opinion. And I'm glad you mentioned what came out of the strategy session. What are the actual time prospects on getting landlord data? I mean, we've heard, you know, well, let's get a process together for getting the data, and how many months are going to be spent on getting a process together. I'm more hopeful about that than I am about this, because at least you have a fourth vote sort of on this issue with Justin Cummings. But I think that you, although I didn't hear all the discussion, made some succinct and relevant comments about that in the meeting. Is there anything you want to emphasize about this process?
We have a proposal that was brought forward by Vice Mayor Cummings with regards to the structure of what that rental or the data collection would look like. The staff has been instructed and then craft it into a recommendation or a potential structure. I'm hoping, and I would hope that the vice mayor will assist in expediting the conversation so that it takes place at least in August, between the first and second meeting in August, and then move forward with it. It will be met with lots of resistance, as usual, per the group Santa Cruz Together and most likely Santa Cruz United. And we'll just have to see with regards to how fast the staff can produce a working model suggestion and then how fast we can, as four voters on the body, move it to make actually start collecting data.
I mean, that's nice. So
I'm hopeful, and I'm hopeful that it will be by the end of August that the program will be approved and then move into functionality.
Are you more than hopeful, or are you willing to force it with a demand that it be on the agenda? I mean, to me, that's the only way you can actually be sure that something's going to be on the agenda, or at least be in a position to, you know, raise the issue in almost a quasi-legal context.
Well, unfortunately, I can't demand anything from the mayor, as we've found from...
No, but you can call for a vote.
Even when I didn't demand it, it was just a suggestion for the community to write to them. It was meant negatively.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about going to...
But this is another reason why...
A vote at council.
...to see the first meeting in August, because in the first meeting in August, if that stuff isn't on the agenda, then we have to start talking about why isn't on the agenda during the calendar review part and say, like, hey, we really need to see... What's the timeline on this? And then if the timeline isn't appropriate or isn't what we want to see... That's when we would make the decision, like, okay, well, we're going to vote now to force it onto the next agenda.
Well, that's my question. Are you prepared to press that issue the first meeting in August if it doesn't show up in a meaningful way?
I will address the issue and try and get a clear and succinct idea of if it's not on that agenda, when it's estimated to come back. And if it's not estimated to come back before the end of September, then I will most likely push or make a motion to prioritize it, if not the second meeting in August and the first meeting in September.
So the answer right now is no, you will not move to have that prioritized in August if it doesn't show up on that agenda, but only under the circumstances which you've just described. I mean, that's the answer that I catch you giving. And, you know, you made it a little more elaborate, but I think you're saying, no, you're not going to do that unless it's going to show up at least at the end of September. But again, that's another promise. You got endless promises you're getting here.
It is, but at the same time, you have to take into consideration the workload on the staff. And I have to acknowledge that because of the visual representation they gave us of all the work that they're doing currently at the moment. Like, you didn't see it, but the whiteboard was just covered with post-it.
Oh, I'm sure they can. I'm sure they can. They can create a huge amount of stuff that they brought. I mean, I saw them talk endlessly about meaningless housing proposals for 3 years. I mean, that's what they like to do. And that is what I think you are trying to stop and trying to work against. Or at least that's my hope as to what you're trying to work against. Now, the homeless task force, as I call this group of people that's going to ignore essentially resolutions and start from zero again on the most basic issues that you tried to bring up as specifics in January, namely, I don't want to call them transitional camps because you're not transitioning to anything, but let's call them survival camps because they deal with real immediate housing emergency needs of folks outside. That and the other issues of the, you know, ordinance concerns about the homeless and obviously the rent situation. These issues are not, I mean, particularly around the homeless thing, have already been endlessly discussed, as you heard several members of the county, the city, the public bring in to you during the last council meeting. Keith McHenry was notable in this, that, you know, you have the reports in front of you. You don't need another task force. You don't need another body. And I think, wasn't that one of the reasons Crone voted against this entire proposal?
You mean initially?
No, at the end, the final vote on the evening agenda.
The no votes were myself, Chris Crone, and Sandy Brown.
Oh, there were three of you.
Yeah.
And again, articulate for us what the reasons were for your no vote.
The vice mayor refused to include in the motion that it would be mandatory for the 11-person body that was nominated to intentionally two additional people experiencing homelessness currently, and then also making sure that they were involved in the design of the work plan and that they would have a voting voice at the table.
Well, let me understand this really clearly. So in other words, you had no problem with the only thing you wanted to see was including two more people who have, I call them homeless folks, call them experiencing homeless, whatever, into essentially a redo of an entire process that has been done repeatedly, but also has come up with specific proposals, and then you have come up with specific proposals that will be ignored during the period of time when this group is chattering away and researching, and that'll be the excuse for ignoring the substantive proposals.
The group has direct instruction in the motion to start off by looking at the reports that were done in 2000 and whatever in 2017. So that previous work is going to be incorporated in the analysis of this current working group. I also feel that I would have much rather gone with the Wisdom Council model, which is much faster. It breaks away from the expert model and focuses more on the average everyday community person model with their perspective. At the same time, there's an issue there with representation of homeless individuals, but we could do the selection process. Anyway, while there are definitely issues with the structure of the thing, the catch, the primary issue that I had was there was not enough representation of people experiencing homelessness.
I understand.
If the only way there's going to be buy-in in the community for anything at all is if there is another community engagement process that is, and then followed by immediate action afterwards, because that's the problem I've seen with the other task force, is that they've happened, the recommendations have come out, and then nothing's happened, so then that data gets old, or people forget it happened, and then someone like myself proposes something, and then everyone goes, whoa, we weren't involved in the process. So now with this, ideally, it will end in no longer than 6 months, this whole task force thing.
Yeah.
And then immediately after that, the council needs to take action on whatever recommendations.
I'm sorry. I think you're pursuing a false trail here.
And no. I would just say to your statement in the beginning of your question, I would prefer and encourage that you use the term transitional encampments, because they can transition into jobs, they can transition into other situations. But using the term survival camp will conflate the Ross camp, which was referred to as a survival camp, to a transitional encampment.
You know, if you're going to spend your time trying to align yourself with a narrative of the right wingers in this community, or those who are the Susie O'Haras in this community, who are essentially presenting a false narrative that essentially wants to disappear the homeless, wants to ignore, dismiss the problem. And I know you don't believe this. You know, that's been my understanding of our previous conversations. But simply going out of your way to talk about buy-in from the community, you're not going to get buy-in from the Klan on rights for blacks. Sorry, it ain't going to happen that way. So that being
right, but I do not perceive that the vast majority of people in Santa Cruz could be compared to a Klansman.
But that's not the vast majority that we're talking about. The most active groups are the Klanish type groups that have come
exactly
to city council.
You need to be able to prove to the non-Klanish type people to, and I'm not going to move away from that term in general anyway, I'm going to refer to them as extremists. Right?
I understand.
So if we're going to move away from the extremist perspective of trying to change their minds and try and get to the people in the middle that don't know what's going on, don't pay attention, but all they hear is that the city is moving without public input, then we have to be able to prove, well, no, here. And if they see a study from years ago, it might not work. I'm not happy with it either, Robert, but I'm only one person on the council, and I cannot force them to move faster, and I cannot
I'm not suggesting
pushing anymore against public input, I'm going to just alienate myself even more, which I'm not trying to do. I want to be able to work with the people of the community to solve the problems, not force things on them. But at the same time, we need to move expeditiously. So it's a delicate balance between wanting to move responsibly and quickly, and at the same time, doing it in a way that is not going to push people towards the extremist pole of, well, if they're not going to have a public input process, then we're going to side with these people that are completely anti-homeless.
You know, it seems to me that unless you press the really positive aspect of the issue rather than trying to answer their negatives, you've got a doom battle to start with. I mean, if you have a situation where it's renters across the city who are being screwed over, you don't want to spend your time, you know, arguing against the landlord data and giving them the opportunities to drag out the process, which is what is happening here with this landlord stuff and with the homeless stuff.
I was the only one that voted against tabling the Just Cause Evictions conversation because there was a threat of...
I know you were, and I commend you for it.
I totally said, no, I'm not going to bow to the threat of recall.
Right.
I'm going to push for tenant protection.
Right, but I think...
I just want to let you know I have two more minutes.
No, you've taken time. I guess, I mean, you know, you have. That's not the point, though. It's good that you did that, but have you maintained that position? My fear is you're being swept along in the other direction in an attempt to appear credible to what you fear is the majority of the community's uncertainty or lack of understanding of the issue. But what's coming up in the next month, since there is no city council meeting, that you would advise people to spend some attention on who are concerned about these three issues? Rent, police behavior toward homeless folks, and also I would call it homeless survival behavior, whether you would or not, because that's what it is. They're not transitioning into jobs. They're not transitioning into housing. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. And if you go along with that, though it may sound like a nice talking point, it doesn't work.
We'll have to examine
that and talk to you about that. But you know, I know that's what Brent is putting out, and I think he's well-intended. Anyway,
I'm going to physically visit Dignity Village, the women's encampment in Portland, as well as the unsanctioned encampment that's still working.
Right, and
July.
Other
things that people can pay attention to with regards to city politics is the recall, because if any of these issues are important to you or any of these issues you think are things that need to be talked about and prioritized,
right,
then you need to stop the potential removal of myself and Councilmember Crone from the community.
And there is a meeting. There is a meeting coming up on Saturday, which Chris has announced publicly. Are you encouraging people to come to that meeting?
If they're interested in learning more about what's going on, there's a community group that's doing some work.
I believe so.
I'm also doing my own kind of push. So if they're interested in working directly with me, then we can do that. If they want to join that group, they're more than welcome to go on Saturday. And we're all working together, you know, but I'll have some different focuses specifically.
And how can people get involved with your group, crew?
You can. They can send me an email to my city email account, dglover@cityofsantacruz.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can call me in my office, which is 831-420-5025.
Okay. Thank you for taking the time. I do more, but I know that you're running out of steam here, or at least running out of time, I should say.
Running out of time. Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you for a longer time if we schedule it.
I'll call you again.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks, Drew.